Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sharon Coolidge, Silent Phil, ones and twos. Sherry, our special guest today, back by popular demand, Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters. He'll be in studio with us here momentarily. Our first in-studio guest in at least 2 years, right?
That's correct.
No, and you know what? I think we had Steve Leeper in studio, didn't we?
Don't make me think, Jason. Oh, my God.
Sometime last year. Rosemary Mooring, she was in
studio. She was. That's true. And mostly, well, I would say, though, that it's Joe's third appearance.
Is it his first three-peat? Really? Wow.
I was going to try and think of a sports analogy, but it's too early for me to think. Joe, I don't know.
Joe will be full of interesting things to say. We'll get to him in just a second. But Sherry, interesting comments made by FC Cincinnati's executive, Jeff Birding, who also is the head of the CVB board right now, last Friday. By the way, it's Visit Cincy now. Is that right?
I mean, I think they didn't change their actual name, but they're really, you know, going to go like by this moniker, thing. Visit Cincy. That's their Twitter handle. It's easier to say than the CVB board.
Yes.
So that doesn't exactly
the chairman of the CVB board, Jeff Birding, in their annual big meeting, gets up and talks about the need for a new arena.
And I do believe that this was his first meeting as the chairperson of that board, and he was chosen. If it's not, it's his second. He was chosen for this very reason, because he thinks big.
Yep.
And that is what city leaders were looking for in really looking at what this board needs to look like.
And I talked to Jeff between then and now, and you know, to be clear, he wasn't saying we're doing it now. It is a number one priority. You know, that we're going to use this money or that money to pay for it. All he is saying is that, hey, this is, you're the chair of the CVB board and you're looking at your assets and, or the assets in this town, and you think, yeah, there's no doubt we need a new arena.
As an average citizen, if somebody said, I know all of the needs and what's happening here. Mm-hmm. I'm plugged in, I've covered it, you know, for 2 decades now, and I know what's needed and what the conversation is. But if I was an average citizen, or I'm, you know, at home in Delhi and I'm talking about what the city needs, you know, people say we need an arena because they go to concerts at Heritage Bank Arena and they have eyes. I will say that Jeff, you know, in, you know, talking about all of this, he made a very good point. He was just saying that's something we need.
That's
so there's
right.
Not plans, you know, this. Even if we started today, by the time an arena gets built, it's going to be 50 years old. 50.
Yep.
So it really is time to do that. And when I was the county reporter, and that's a decade ago, I mean, I wrote a story. I famously called the arena shabby then. That kind of created like a huge stir like up. And that was like, I don't know. How would you all describe it? That's kind of where that conversation was going. You know, we really are in the throes of, like, you know, the RFP is out to bring a convention center hotel that's definitely needed. You have to have that to have the conventions, because if you want your restaurant scene to survive, you have to bring conventioners into the city. I wish I could say, you know, your average, you know, citizens are going to come downtown and we're going to thrive. But you need, like, I think the number is like 10,000 people downtown, like, Monday through Thursday. So they're sorting that out right now. Then they're looking at, does the convention center need to be expanded? And, you know, Jeff was just pointing out, as those things happen, and he is very aware of how needed those are, that we also need an arena.
Yep.
If you don't say it, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, just bring awareness to trying to get the conversation started. No, nothing but beyond that right now. And I'm glad he's doing it because I think it's interesting timing as well, because we should actually be coming off the NCAA tournament right now. We were originally – people may not remember this, but we were originally slated to host the first and second round of the NCAA tournament at U.S. Bank Arena. Well, it's now Heritage Bank Arena. Heritage Bank Center, right? Yeah. we were supposed to host this in Indianapolis, the NCAA, somewhere a decision was made that, hey, our arena is not up to snuff, and they took those first and second round games to Indianapolis, which to me is just insult to injury because that's one of our peer cities, and it's certainly another statement that, hey, the arena is not it needs addressed. So I'm glad Jeff is at least raising awareness for it, and somewhere along the line, it's got to be dealt with.
I mean,
so. We're
talking, like, we just were in the national spotlight, deservedly so. And I felt like we told our story so well with, you know, the Bengals going to the Super Bowl. We're in this huge spotlight and people really seized what it needed to look like. And then, you know, after we have new mayor Aftab Pureval going out, watch for a story where I talk about his kind of government style, his governmental style and what's happening, you know, what you're seeing. But all of these, like the plans and the projects, those things all have to happen. So there's more things to talk about. For instance, when the Bengals go to the Super Bowl next year. So anyway, these are just conversations that are happening, and you know, it never hurts to say them aloud.
No, good stuff. Stay tuned on that. We'll see what comes of it, furthering the conversation on new arena. We didn't get to it today, but I think, you know, Jeff Birding is continuing the conversation. And I wrote about in December about the idea, the possibility of decking Fort Washington Way. Those conversations are continuing on in the business community. And I think the angle is you're angling for potentially for some federal infrastructure dollars, potentially for that. But that's still yet to be determined on what the real plan
the ask
is for
looks
that.
Like. Yeah. What the ask looks like. Everyone has to get their ducks in a row here, I think, before, you know, you put in a plan to say, I want the decking. Like,
right.
You know, the bridge plan, it's there. It's there. But, right. You know, some of these other things need to come along before you're trotting out to the federal government like, this is what we're going to need.
Let's jump over and bring on Joe Dieters. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And Sherry tells me his third time on the podcast. I know
is
it was
it
at least
really?
Your second.
It is. Wow. That's impressive.
It's great to see you. You're in studio.
I can't believe you guys tricked me three times to do this.
Our live recording.
It's like you forget. It's like we're all so nice on the phone. Hi.
I've learned to cope with bad things by just forgetting about it. I think I just keep forgetting.
How me you too. Do? I block it out.
Yeah.
I got a tough question for you out of the gate, Prosecutor Dieters. How you doing?
I'm doing great. We're busy as can be. Spent the last 2 days in Columbus with the Attorney General and the Governor. With our constitutional amendment we're proposing now, I don't know if you've followed that or not, but the House and the Senate have to pass 2/3 majorities in both houses, and I'll put a constitutional amendment on the ballot saying that the judges should consider community safety when setting a bond. I mean, it sounds like common sense, but the Supreme Court about a month and a half ago in a case out of Hamilton County, the DeBose case, found that whether or not the nature and circumstances, basically, of the crime are not to be considered when setting a bond. The only consideration is, will they show up? That's it. So if you have, let's say Timothy McVeigh comes to Hamilton County and blows up the federal building and kills 163 people, honorably discharged veteran, no record, he can afford about $10,000, so he should be out, according to the Supreme Court of Ohio. I'm not kidding you. When I tell people this, they don't believe it. The Attorney General, the Governor, everyone is just like outraged by this.
I am following along. Right. I did used to cover courts. In fact, one of my jobs back in the day was I covered courtroom A, where bonds are set every morning to kind of see who was arrested overnight. And, you know, it never occurred to me to look at some of the nitty gritty lines and what the judges can consider, because every single time it was discussed whether this person was a danger to the community or not when setting bond. Right. That it is common sense. And it was really shocking to see them say no. And I have to say, a little bit scary.
And if you covered Room A, you know that pretrial services does a really good job of scoring defendants based on category, prior record, things of that nature, risk to the community, chance of them showing up again. And DeBose, he's accused of murder. He fled to Las Vegas. He lied about where he was. He had different forms of credit cards and IDs on him. He was fleeing, okay? And he was arrested, brought back here. Initially, the judge set the bond at $1.5 million. The judge that set the bond, I believe, lost an election. And then another judge came in and reduced it to $500,000. And the victim's family said, you know, we're scared to death. So we got another hearing, and the judge raised it back to $1.5 million after hearing from the family. And it went to the Supreme Court, and that's how they ruled that the only consideration now is whether or not they can make it and show up. So
I assume it's being, well, maybe not appealed, right?
No, it can't be appealed. The only thing we can do is pass a constitutional amendment instructing the judges that your priority is the safety of the community.
Do they pass the constitutional amendment, or is that something that they pass and then we have to vote on?
We have to vote on it. It'll be this November, and hopefully people call their legislators and tell them, vote for this thing. Both leadership in both houses have told us they have the votes to do this, and they're confident it's going to go on the ballot this fall.
Why is this a problem in the Supreme Court with a Republican majority on the Supreme Court?
I don't think there's a Republican majority. I think that it's been very clear that the Chief Justice has been siding with the Democrats on the court. So it's really basically a 4-3 Democrat-controlled Supreme Court. Whether you like it or not, that's just the reality.
Do you feel like there's been a shift there?
Probably about – they started tinkering with some of our more serious cases. Rayshon Johnson, oh, my God. How they can – 4-3
Tell us what he did.
Rayshon Johnson killed a young P&G executive, Shannon Marks, in Walnut Hills. Her and her husband were newly married. Shannon was a wonderful, successful girl. I mean, hired right out of Bowling Green State University for P&G. They bought a house over in Walnut Hills. The husband went to work one morning, and Rayshon Johnson lived with his grandma behind her house. Saw the husband leave for work, grabs a baseball bat. I think he was going in to sexually assault her. Because he could see into her shower from his grandmother's house. And he got a baseball bat, went in the back door, confronted her in the bathroom, beat her. I think he tried to do something, and she fought him. He started beating her with a baseball bat. And to the point where she was semi-conscious, laying on the bathroom floor. He went into her bedroom, stole $13 or something of money, and was leaving the house, heard her upstairs moaning on the floor, went back with the baseball bat and struck her 3 times in the back of the head, just crushed her skull and killed her. Her husband came back that night and found her. I mean, he came home and he could hear the TV going, the lights were off because he left in the morning and he had been calling Shannon all day and she wasn't answering. Comes home, finds her. The 911 call was the most hideous call you've ever heard in your life.
So I am going to ask you, I'm going to ask you sure. What the Ohio Supreme Court did here, but I do want to comment on what you were just saying. Like, these cases are so serious. This happened so long ago. You remember every detail.
Yeah. Yep.
You've been doing this a long time.
Yep.
You've seen a lot of killers. You've seen a lot of victims. What did the Ohio Supreme Court do here?
Well, they reversed it. They reversed it and said that that the attorney was ineffective because he I think it was this case. Yeah, he left a juror on that he shouldn't have left on. It's just, look, you can make up anything to get rid of a case like this. You could say it's
you have to retry it.
So we had to retry it. And we went to another judge, another set of lawyers, another jury, retried the entire case. The whole family had to live through this again. And again, a second jury, second judge, guilty, death penalty. The case was horrible. I mean, if it was so gut-wrenching when you saw what he did to Shannon. And I do want to say something real quick about CPD and their homicide division. How they caught this guy was incredible. He had climbed a fence in the backyard, and he was wearing gloves, and he got in the back, and he left a footprint on a landscaping timber in the backyard that they saw. These cops did, detectives did. And they got the lift off of it, and they recognized it as the new Air Jordan shoe. They follow shoe patterns. This is a new Air Jordan shoe print. And so this was such a horrible case. The media was out at the scene constantly. This guy granted an interview with Trisha Mackey of Channel 19.
Former podcast guest.
At one point, the camera panned down to look like he had some crummy looking dog with him. It panned down, and he's wearing new Air Jordans.
When was this?
It was in the mid 90s, wasn't
it? Before I got here, which was 2002. So,
yeah, it was like 98, maybe 97. And, they brought him in. Actually, McKinley Brown, who was my chief detective for a while, brought him in, and he confessed the whole thing, told him the whole deal.
I mean, how frustrated are you? You know, the homicide detectives, and it's kind of an old, untold story now. I've known some of them for a while, mm-hmm. and I see, you know, their Facebook posts with their families and everything. We talk a lot about the number of homicides right now in Cincinnati, but that means you have a whole cadre of detectives working constantly.
Right.
Constantly. And when we talk about, you know, the strength, this is a whole different subject, like the strength of the manpower on the streets and we need police officers, there's a lot of police officers dedicated to this kind of work that's like, okay, well, the call time and are they out responding to calls and everything, but you have to have all these officers over there doing that kind of work. Just doesn't happen by accident, and it doesn't take 2 seconds. So anyway,
I got elected state treasurer. By the time I came back, they had reversed it the first time, so we had to retry it. Same horrible case, goes to the Supreme. Now, if you remember, in a death penalty case, it's bifurcated, so you have a guilt phase first, then you go to the penalty phase. The grand jury or the jury, petit jury, finds them guilty of the murder or the aggravated murder with specifications. It goes to the penalty phase. And the jury has to weigh the mitigation, whatever the defense wants to put on. He fell off his high chair when he's 3 or some bull crap like that. When they can put on any mitigation they want, and all we have are the facts, the nature and circumstances of the crime itself. This crime was horrible. I mean, it was so disgusting. So in the second trial, he called somebody as a witness who we had not heard from before. It was his son, who was like about 14. And basically he said, don't kill my dad. You know, he's the only thing I got, blah, blah, blah. Well, the jury still gave him the death penalty. And then it went back to the Supreme Court. And our Chief Justice and the 3 Democrats voted again to set the verdict aside for the second time, saying they weren't convinced the aggravation of that crime outweighed the mitigation. The only mitigation –
this is the current Chief Justice.
Yeah.
And that would be Maureen O'Connor.
Yeah. Yeah. So they felt that the aggravation didn't outweigh the mitigation, which is nonsense if you sat through that trial or read the transcript. And the son, by the way, this guy who was really praying for his dad, is now in – the prison system for murder himself. So, I mean, obviously the court didn't know that, but they were hell-bent on stopping this death penalty verdict. And I remember when I was state treasurer, Shannon's mom lives up in Bowling Green. And I would visit her. She didn't go to the trial. She's so traumatized. I mean, it was her only child, obviously, daughter. And I think she might have had a brother. It was her only daughter. And I would go see Pat. Her name's Pat. And I would go up and see Pat when I was traveling through the state. And I remember the first time I saw her. And it's so hard to describe to lay people the devastation people have when they're – I mean, everybody knows someone who died suddenly in their family of a heart attack or a stroke or something. But could you imagine if your family member was taken from your life and you knew somebody was responsible for doing that? I mean, it is a rage and frustration. It's almost indescribable.
You do seem very frustrated. And there's been some other points of frustration, too, about how things are going, about – the justice system?
Mm-hmm.
Is the justice system broken?
It is. It's in turmoil. I think it is. It's, you know, everybody talks about these guys that we all hear this, you know, don't snitch, don't do that. We're having a lot of murders where I believe the, let's say I killed Jason's brother. And Jason saw me kill his brother. And Jason won't cooperate. And they're like, oh, they don't want to cooperate with the police. No, Jason wants to kill me himself. Okay? Why would you depend on a justice system where they're going to do that crap like they did in Shannon Marks to me and my family when I know I can take care of myself? And, I mean, we have people that are murdered in Cincinnati now. And homicide will tell us he's a suspect in two other murders. You know, it's off the charts what's going on. And what's frustrating for me is you can't speak the truth. You can't – everyone's afraid to say what's going on. 90% of our murders are African-American, and it's done by other African-Americans. It's not white police officers. So diverting your attention away from what's really happening out there is such a problem for the community, and to be able to blame everything else except personal responsibility for these crimes is a path of disaster, I believe. And I don't know how it's going to get better.
Are there programs like what's the solution to this? Because, you know, in 2006, after that record high year that year, there was all kind of like crime finding initiatives coming out of City Hall, like different, you know, best practices. Mm-hmm. And they did go down. But of course, there's a lot of, you know, talk about how much that was really the reason, or, you know, things ebb and flow. But are there things that can be done? Like, does the street worker program, does it get people to talk? Like, is there any sort of solution kind of bubbling up
here? The solution is pretty simple. And in this environment, in the city, it's probably unattainable. You have to have politicians that are willing to support the police, period. Okay, the police, and who can blame them? Look, you guys ought to pull the number of traffic stops in the city of Cincinnati the last 3 or 4 years. They're probably a third of what they were. Who the hell wants to pull anybody over now and be on videotape about everything? You're a racist, that you can do anything you – it is out of control. I was in L.A. For the Super Bowl, and it's like escape from New York. You go to downtown L.A., there's 65,000 homeless people there. My wife and I were coming back from lunch one afternoon. It's about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And there's somebody standing in the middle of the street, clearly high on something or has also some kind of mental illness, screaming at cars as they're passing, totally naked. And I'm like, well, That's the future right there, because you're not willing to step up. It's not fair to the homeless people. I mean, when John Cranley was a mayor, before we cleared out 3rd Street of all the tent encampment down there, people couldn't even walk to Reds games. There's hypodermic needles and human waste all over the street. I called John and I said, do you have room for these people? Because we're going to get these people off public property. And he said, yeah, they just won't go because they can't get high or drunk. And they don't want to go to the shelters. Well, that's not my fault that they can't. It's not your kid's fault that they can't walk to a game, that they don't want to go there because they can't get drunk. I mean, really? Is that the way we deal with this stuff now?
So we did also see another big decision come out of the State House with the idea that there's no more licensing for carrying concealed weapons. Where do you stand on that?
Well, first of all, you're never going to get rid of guns. There's 400 million guns in America. I mean, they're there. Okay, so the bad guys all have guns. They all do. If a good guy has a gun, I mean, you see these mass shootings, the only time they're stopped is when somebody in the crowd has a gun and stops them. And look, I wish that wasn't the case. I wish we could snap my fingers and all the guns disappeared everywhere. They're not going to.
Do you think that we're actually going to see people walking around like with guns in their waistbands?
They do now. I had a guy at protest in my office the other day. He's got a gun on his waistband. You know, our investigators got to talk to him. He goes, you know, he's got no record. He's allowed to carry, you know. But I'll tell you what, going back to the Supreme Court, you guys pay attention to this. They took in a case, this is on the civil side, that you should pay attention to. They took in a case that's going to affect tort reform in Ohio. And they're going to reverse it. I would bet you anything, Maureen O'Connor and the 3 Democrats are going to vote to reverse tort reform in Ohio, which caps damages.
In the civil side.
Oh, right. On the civil side. And that's going to be a huge battle in the Supreme Court this year.
So you think it should be capped? It is capped now?
Well,
you
I don't know.
It has a chance to be overturned?
I'm torn on the issue. I just know what's going on behind the scenes politically. The plaintiff's attorneys are all ramping up on this thing. The insurance companies are ramping up on the other side. And that's the problem with running for Supreme Court is you don't control your own message. These outside groups come in and they're defining you. And you
can't talk about it.
You can't have anything to do with it. You can't have anything. Now, they have R&Ds next to their name. Supreme Court Court of Appeals.
Yep.
This year, they'll have that. You'll know who the Republicans are, Democrats are. And, you know, this year, it probably helps the Republicans. 2 years from now, it might help the Democrats. Who the hell knows? But that's coming. You guys should pay attention to tort reform. That's going to be.
I'm going to go back to politics. And mm-hmm. you talk about defund the police and some of this bail reform. Mm-hmm. And you've been really outspoken on that, obviously, what you've said here today. Do you feel like your voice is – it's more important than ever for you being in this role as Democrats have taken over control of the courthouse, obviously have taken more control of local governments here in Hamilton County. Do you feel like it's even more important for you to speak out against
these policies? Jason, I think I share with you a sign I have on every floor of my building.
Yeah.
And it's the orders given to Joshua Chamberlain at Gettysburg. He's at Little Round Top, and he's told, you are the left side of this line. They are going to try to outflank you. And if they overtake you, they are going to overtake the entire army, and the war is lost. I have that hanging in every floor of my office, telling people, this is what we're up
against. Did you just do this?
Yes. I did it about 3 months ago, 4 months ago. And because we're getting battled. And you know, what's interesting about it is we do a rap sheet every Tuesday, and we highlight 3 cases generally where some judge, this is the charge, this was the judge, this is what they decided to do, this is how they got out. Sometimes it's this is who they murdered after they got out, that kind of stuff. It's purely factually based. I don't editorialize. I don't say this judge is a piece of crap. I don't do anything like that. But
– or Republican or Democrat.
Are you doing it?
No. As a matter of fact, some of our Democrat judges we compliment. You know, Alan Triggs has been one of them. We're having judges now based on that Supreme Court case I talked about. Brad Greenberg on the record last week, or maybe it was Monday. He had a murder case. He was arraigning. And he basically said, I know what the court said, but not on my watch. That's not happening. I'm protecting the community. And Judge Triggs basically said the same thing. The judges are upset about it because no one knows better than the judge himself how to set a bond and make sure, you know, everything. You got to balance this stuff. And these judges, that's been removed from them. Now we're going to have bond hearings in the Supreme Court of Ohio. And by the way, if you have these bond hearings, they can call witnesses. They can call our little 8-year-old girl who's a rape victim. That's great. And then we have another situation where we can hurt these victims. Anyway, that is, I think, our role in that, in the prosecutor's office is to bring out the facts. But, you know, you hear about Facebook stifling speech. The president of the United States, they took him off Twitter. I mean, really. They let Ayatollah Khomeini on Twitter and they take Trump down. I mean, what the hell is this was going on? And they're trying to keep me quiet. That's the new strategy.
Who is they? Because I do think that Twitter took the former president off. What they said, I won't weigh in on what I think. They said that it was factually based, that he was posting things that are not factual, and I'm sitting here listening to you, and I see the rap sheets, and those things are factual, and so I feel like you are saying a lot of facts. Is someone trying to keep you quiet from telling actual facts?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Well, believe it or not, I'm not allowed to talk about it, but complaints have been filed
against
me.
You're not talking about Twitter. You're not talking about –
No. I'm talking about the court.
Okay.
Judges or lawyers?
Judges.
Have filed complaints against you?
No, not complaints. Lawyers have filed complaints. Ironically.
That's what they do.
That's been happening your whole career.
And what I love is the free speech ACLU lawyers doing it. What I said was, and it's in the complaint that I said, people need to pay attention who they're electing as judge. Wow, that's outrageous that you would say something like that. Isn't it?
I've said that for a long time.
I'm disrespecting.
You're voting all the way down. All the way down the ballot. I've always said, don't just vote all D or all R. Actually, know who you're voting for.
I'll tell you what.
They're going to make decisions about
bond. It's harder and harder. And Jason knows this. We beat Trump by 90,000 votes in Hamilton County. Do you know how hard it is to get people to say, okay, I'm voting for Joe Biden and Joe Dieters? I mean.
And you'd had to raise almost $2 million.
We raised
$2
million.
Yeah.
And that probably 4 years from now would be $3 million if we were going to survive.
Oh, look, here he is. He's breaking news. He's running again.
But the Soros money is pouring into these prosecutor races. There were 14 that were targeted 2 years ago. I was one of them. Soros' group won 12 out of 14. All around the country. The only one who survived was in Phoenix, Arizona, and Cincinnati, Ohio. And the rest of them got beat. It's very hard. The Democrats, for whatever reason, their wealthy donors are willing to dump tons of money into these kinds of things. Yeah. The Republicans tend not to. You know, they think, oh, it'll be taken care of. But there's a lot of people in Cincinnati that recognize the value of the prosecutor's office and keeping the streets as, you know, clean as possible.
Including Democrats.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm talking about every day.
No, absolutely. I have some pretty big Democratic donors to my campaign. And it goes both ways.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah, sure.
As someone who has, you know, been the state treasurer and, you know, followed politics all of your career, what do you think about what's going on with the 100 different maps that they've passed and rejected and passed and rejected?
Well, I agree with the Attorney General. This constitutional amendment that was passed in 2015 has been a total disaster. because there's no fail safe if they can't agree. You know, like if the legend, he brought this up yesterday.
As we're Dave seeing Yost, now.
Yeah, we're gridlock him.
Right. But if there's a, let's say the legislature passes something, the governor vetoes it. If they have 2/3, it doesn't matter. They still are going to pass it. There's nothing like that in this constitutional amendment. So it's just bouncing back and forth like a ping pong ball, and it could go on forever. The problem is there's federal mandates on congressional elections. They have to have this primary. So they're going to proceed. I mean, I don't understand why the chaos, you know. Look, when the Democrats controlled Ohio, when Strickland was a governor and the Dems and Dick Celeste – and they gerrymandered or whatever you want to say, they wrote the thing. My feeling is, and I felt the same way when Strickland and Celeste were pardoning death row inmates, that's their job, okay? They won. That's what you get. And if the Democrats controlled the state house and they were drawing the maps, they should be able to, I think. The Republicans just happen to have it right now. They should be able to do it too. But once you – I just – it disturbs when people politically, when they can't be successful at the ballot box, they always sue. And the courts have been overrun by this.
Here we are. We're back to the courts, actually, because there is that constitutional amendment. And the courts are the ones saying, well, you didn't draw those fair. And so here we have the courts, even though technically the legislature is making the decision, the fact that it keeps getting sent back is that the judges – are actually making these decisions. And so we are kind of right back to that premise.
One person's decided to do this, okay? Don't fool yourself. It's one person. And what the motivation is, I have no idea. I know what's been happening with our death penalty cases. I know what and for me, just saying that, I'm sure someone's going to file a complaint against me. And I spent in the disciplinary counsel.
In a media interview?
No. Yeah, absolutely. I've had complaints filed against me. We had a judge here in Hamilton County a way back, Judge Anne Marie Tracy, and she wanted to seat two separate juries on a death penalty case between penalty and guilt, because she said when you death qualify a jury, this was her quote. Now, death qualifying means the judge is going to instruct you on the death penalty. Even if you disagree with it, are you going to be able to sign a death verdict if the facts fit and it fits the law? And if they say, I disagree with the death penalty, but I would sign it, then they can be on the jury. If they agree to follow the law. So a jury tends, according to Judge Tracy, to skew more conservative because they'll support and sign a death verdict. So on the record, Judge Tracy said, I'm going to bifurcate this, which was totally illegal. You can't do that. But I'm going to bifurcate these juries to have two jurors, because when you do death qualify, the jurors tend to be too white and not liberal enough. And that was on the record. So we filed a mandamus forcing her to follow the law. And the media was going crazy because I sued a sitting judge in a death penalty case, and during my press conference I said, well, I was trying to talk to the reporters. I said, could you imagine if I said the jurors were too black and not conservative enough? You guys would kill me. But it's okay for her to say that. Well, disciplinary counsel at that time decided that they're going to start an investigation of me for this, and I fought that. For over a year. That's what they do. They try to keep you from talking. It's like living in communist China. It's incredible. The rules with lawyers is you can't criticize judges. If you do, you're in trouble. What kind of line of work is that? Especially a lawyer who we talk
to. I don't know. Jason's
much.
A columnist. What do you think?
Joe Dieters won't be silenced. That's what I think.
Probably not, but I did see the governor. He's doing great.
He was the star of last night's Democratic debate. Talk about him the whole time.
I'm sure he was, but I think Mike has been, if not the best governor, one of the best governors in my lifetime. He has been. I remember when this all. He's getting a lot of criticism about initial response to COVID, and I remember we were having mask mandates and all this other stuff. And I remember calling the governor, said, "You know, are we doing the right thing here? Talk me through this." He said, "Joe, let me ask you this: you're the governor, and your health people come in." And he said, tell you that we're going to lose 3 million Ohioans if we don't do something. This is uncharted water. What are you supposed to do as governor? And they say, we need to get mask mandates. We need these people separated. So he did. What if it was much worse than we thought it was going to be? And, you know, looking back on it, it was horrible, but it wasn't as bad as
it's
predicted.
Easy to go back and second guess now.
And that's what's happening.
But you have to remember, though. I mean, I remember. We just didn't know. And I kind of remember, like, in the terms of the election. Like, for safety purposes. Because right. We're talking about moving the election now. We moved the election then. And I've been thinking back. Like, we did that for help. Nobody knew. I had COVID at the very beginning of the pandemic. And the doctor was like, we don't know. Like, and he didn't know. Nobody knew.
Nobody knew. But so, if you're the governor, what do you do? What are you supposed to do? I mean, you say, oh, yeah, 3 million, whatever. I mean, that's a very dangerous path. And I think, look, there would be no reason for Mike DeWine to do what he did except for his interest in the people of the state of Ohio. I just have known him for almost 40 years, and I know where his heart is. And he was doing what he thought was best for the state. You can disagree with it. You can say, well, I would have seen that, you know, that virus wasn't going to be so bad. And bull crap.
How about, you know, actually speaking of that primary debate, let's get out our crystal balls, boys.
Sure.
Who's winning the Democratic nomination for governor?
I don't know. Jason, do you know where the money is? I don't even know where the money is.
I don't.
I mean, neither are raising a lot.
Neither. Wait. None of it is as much as the governor has.
No, that's not going to happen.
And let's just say Mike DeWine's getting reelected, and I don't think he's going to have any problems in the primary or the general election.
Mike DeWine is not going to be caught with a hooker somewhere. It's just not going to happen. You know, Mike DeWine is not going to do something
stupid. Parking lot of some Cleveland suburb. No,
right.
No.
Right. He's not going to do that. He's not going to do that. And, you know, you might disagree with some of his stuff, but his heart has always been in the right place. I think John's got a hell of a hill to climb with all the endorsements that Nan's got, especially Sherrod Brown. That, you know, whatever you think of Sherrod, I mean, he's got to have operatives throughout the state, people that.
And that is very true. And it's very political because I was watching the debate last night and there are some questions that I would have asked. Obviously, I'm always like that when I watch interviews, but I would have really wanted to focus on the city story that they're both telling. Like, you're coming out, like, tell me, you know, why you both ran cities in Ohio and why what in that time qualifies you to be the governor and what of the things the cities you're going to bring to the state. And we didn't really get answers on that kind of question, but
Voino was a mayor of Cleveland, you know, and I think that the turnout in a Democratic primary this year is going to be abysmal.
Yeah.
So the people that are going to vote in this Democratic primary.
Well, are people going to know when the primary is? I'm confused myself.
Well,
I don't know.
Looks like it's going full speed ahead now. I mean, they're playing chicken now. You know, they're just driving right at that May 3rd date. And but it's going to be incredibly low turnout. So the diehard Dems, I think, I think John's got a tough deal going.
You reference you and John have had a good working relationship for a long time, and when he was mayor, and obviously he's a Democrat, you're a Republican. But I thought you really worked really, really well together on that homeless issue that you referenced earlier. How would you characterize your relationship with
new mayor, Aftab Pirbal, who you known from when he was clerk of courts.
I knew him a little bit, but I after he got elected, we reached out to his office, said I'd like to meet with him, and we've never heard anything back. Nothing. I saw him at the Super Bowl. I saw him at in Dallas for the UC stuff. And I made some wisecrack to him. I don't know if he remembers it. I said, well, I guess the only time I get to meet with you is when we go to a football game, you know. But I'm sure he's busy, whatever. But we're going to have issues. I have no question they're going to start coming together. And hopefully we can do the same thing I did with John. I knew John since he was in high school.
Yeah.
I tried to convince him to be a Republican. He decided to go to theology school, and I lost him.
I think he went. Wasn't he in the same class with your brother Dennis at St. Xavier?
Yeah,
they're close in age.
You know, we're both Jesuit trained, which tells you we're kind of tainted anyway. So
your little brother Dennis.
Yes, of course.
I mean, if you could tell the mayor anything right now, what do you need him to know?
He needs to support the police. He needs to let them be proactive. And I'm not talking about being racist and hurting people and things like that. I'm talking about being proactive, getting in there and finding out what the heck is going on. Because look, this crime problem is not going to be solved by government. The government can't even balance a budget. I mean, how the hell are they going to raise a kid? And, you know, Hillary Clinton's, it takes a village to raise it. No, it doesn't. It takes two parents. It takes especially a dad sitting on male children. And I know there's success stories, but if you look around this town at the successful African-American people, judges and things, they had a pretty intact family. The Mallorys, I mean, they were pretty intact, and they had a dad sitting on them.
So, yes, they did. The Mallory boys definitely did that, and they talk about how important that was to them. But let me say this to you then. So these things are important, but those are social issues. And we do hear that coming out of City Hall, that we do want to do those things. We do want to support these organizations. Mm-hmm. But then you also say, well, we have to – not you, every – like, okay, fully fund the police, but also solve that problem. It's not going to solve itself. So do we spend money on all of the social issues and the police?
Well, if you –
not that much money. Those stories are coming.
But there's frustration – in law enforcement. I don't know if you saw the chief in D.C., African-American chief. There was a shootout in downtown Washington, D.C., and he was so frustrated. The media was there, and he said, okay, we need to start letting the police be police, okay? These social programs are – these feel-good things are great, but ain't working. And look, again, they are social issues, but they bleed into the criminal justice system because when you have – when it becomes acceptable for – I don't know where you guys grew up, how the attitude was, but in my generation, in high school, if a girl got pregnant, it was a big scandal. I mean, my God, so-and-so got pregnant. You know, it was like – now it's a badge of honor. Oh my God, you know, they.
I mean, I wouldn't go that far. We don't hear a lot about it.
No, I would go that far because I can't tell you how many. And it's not just the girl's fault, okay? How about the guy that impregnates four or five girls and then doesn't take care of them? And we had the Lucasville Riot cases, and the FBI used what they called tunnel tapes. They took microphones and snaked them through the vents to hear what these guys are talking about. All they talked about, I'm not kidding you, and you can ask Mark Pietmeyer, who ran his investigations, was how they were going to get out and impregnate women. I'm dead serious. I am dead serious. That was going on at Lucasville. But nonetheless, it's become so acceptable now. These kids are being raised by their grandmas. And everybody's like, well, I wonder why is this kid running around with drug dealers? The only male authority figure in their life is this alpha male in the neighborhood who's watching out for him and taking care of him. Not dad. It's some guy who's up to no good. And it just builds on itself.
I think someone who's, outspoken about really, I think, shares a lot in your viewpoints on the police department and criminal justice, and is Christopher Smitherman, former vice mm-hmm. mayor. And you've come out and endorsed his candidacy for yeah. Hamilton County Commissioner. Not only endorsed him, but you've cut an ad, a radio ad for sure. him. Talk about that and why you believe that was important, because he is running not as a Republican, but as an independent. Yeah,
Chris and I have had an interesting relationship, because when he first came here, came to city council, he was radical, you know, it's everybody's fault, you know, and I was the bad guy and everything. I think over time, Chris saw what was going on and saw what was going on in the community, and he's a smart guy. Chris Smitherman is in politics for the right reason, which unfortunately is very rare today. I said the governor's heart is there too. Chris is in politics for the right reason. He doesn't need this, you know? I grew up, my grandfather was the sheriff of Hamilton County for 24 years, Democrat sheriff. And I grew up under I was raised believing public service was very honorable. So when I talk to assistant prosecutors or people that want to become assistant prosecutors, I always tell them, if you're in this for the money, you're either going to be really disappointed or you'll go to jail. Because there's no way you're going to make money doing this. It just doesn't happen. But many of the people that work in my office, and I do, as I was going through that office, got a lot of personal satisfaction trying to deliver justice to people. I told a story at a UC class last week when we got Joseph Paul Franklin, who was a racist serial killer, went out through the Midwest, killed 20-some people. He was killing African-Americans and Jewish people. And he came to Bond Hill. I was in law school. He came to Bond Hill and killed two little boys in Bond Hill. He was looking for interracial couples. And he shot Larry Flint because Larry Flint had an interracial couple in Hustler magazine. He shot Vernon Jordan in Fort Wayne when he was running the Urban League. And that case was unsolved for years. And when I became prosecutor, he had been confessing the same and similar stuff. We sent one of my assistant prosecutors, Missy Powers, got a confession from him. But the point of the story is the mothers, I mean, the loss they endured and suffered with every day because their son was shot like, you know, a deer with a deer rifle on the streets of Cincinnati, on Tennessee Avenue in Bond Hill. I brought him in once we knew for sure it was Franklin. And Franklin was on death row in Missouri. I brought him in. I said, look, we know for sure Joseph Paul Franklin did this to your kids. And he's on death row in Missouri. But if you want him brought back, we'll bring him back. And they said, we want him back. And so we tried him here in Cincinnati. But they were so thankful to the office for caring enough about their kids to bring his ass back and have a judge and jury find him guilty here. That's where I get my satisfaction.
We did stray off of Christopher yeah. Smitherman for one second.
Oh, I'm
there.
Sorry
I
about
did, it. No, I wouldn't have it any other way. But I did want to – do you feel like he should have run as a Republican?
Tried to get him to. I did. I tried. I said, Chris, come on, you know.
And he didn't say, you have the smartest political mind in Hamilton County. It's been proven over and over, and I'm going to listen to you. he didn't say that?
No, he's an honest person. He wasn't willing to do something he didn't agree with.
Can he win without the R next to his name?
It's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard. I'm going to do everything I can to help him. I think he's hands down the most qualified person for that job. And he would be great to have on the county commission. I would love to see Chris there. Good guy. Really good guy.
I only have one more thing, Sherry, and that's congratulations on your new grandbaby.
Thank you. Yeah, little Lucy, my second grandchild. Isn't that great? She's cute.
Don't really think of you as a grandpa, but sure thing, Joe.
Well, I don't see my wife as a grandma either.
I covered your inauguration. I covered your inauguration, and Patrick was running around everywhere.
Have you seen him lately?
He's a man, I think.
He's 6'4". He's monstrous, and he's
this is the youngest.
Patrick.
How old is he?
Is he junior?
17. He's a senior in high school, and he's trying to decide to go to UC or XU. And
well,
he's getting lots of pressure from his brothers and sisters.
And do you have a preference?
I went to UC. I graduated from UC twice, so I'm kind of prejudiced that way. But I think Xavier's more of a he needs to be watched.
Oh, well, you'll be there.
But yeah, I know, because like, what is it that there's this little spot in Cintas Center where you'll look up.
Oh,
there. There's all these Dieters guys sitting there watching their Musketeers.
That little niche in there.
Yeah, that little cubby there where you guys are
pretty funny.
Buzz and Dennis and
they're all
Joe
there.
And
yeah, it's kind of funny. It's right next to the president's box, and we had a great view for the big fight. Do you remember the fight with UC? Oh my gosh, that was unbelievable. Anyway,
Patrick, if you're listening, which you probably aren't.
Oh, he'll listen if he knows we're going to talk about him.
Go to UC, buddy.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew. Thank you for coming on.
Guys, anytime, you can trick me anytime you want to come on. I'm happy to do it.